Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. And welcome. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. Today we'll be talking with a marriage and family therapist and a clinical social worker about the most common topics that women bring to their therapist and what their contemporary struggles seem to be moving into the 21st century. Jennifer Kogan is a licensed, independent clinical social worker and family therapist with almost 20 years of ongoing training, social work, and private practice experience. She offers solution-focused counseling and strategies to boost communication skills and increase feelings of trust, goodwill, and connection. Jennifer is also a wife and a parent who is familiar with the joys and struggles that go along with raising a family in Washington, D.C. Phyllis Goldberg is a California-licensed marriage and family therapist who brings over 30 years of clinical experience to the challenges of families in flux. In the recently published book, Whose Couch Is It Anyway? Moving Your Millennial, she and Rosemary Lichtman guide moms as they navigate the generation gap with their boomerang kids. In life, adventure travel has always been at the top of her bucket list. This summer, Phyllis and her husband will celebrate their 50th anniversary, traveling to parts unknown with their adult children and five grandsons. So welcome, Jennifer and Phyllis.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So before we start, Phyllis, why don't you tell me a little bit about your journey to becoming a therapist?
Okay, well, this was a long time ago. And right after high school, I got a BA in psychology. And then I went off track, at least what would be off track in today's situation. I married and had two children. I worked in the field in substance abuse and in inpatient psychiatry. And it wasn't until the kids were settled in school, you know, that was about a decade after my BA, that I went back to graduate school and got a PhD and, you know, opened my practice. So, you know, rather than a gap year, I took a gap decade.
And what was your interest in therapy?
Well, you know, I was, you know, generally curious by nature, and in terms of the work, it kind of sounds hokey, but I enjoyed helping others and just followed through with that kind of a situation. My life had gotten very complicated with marriage and the travel, and I wanted to bring it all under one roof, and it's been an amazing experience working with people.
And Jen?
You know, it's interesting that Phyllis mentions being curious, because I definitely factor that in as playing a role in my path. I grew up as the oldest of four kids in Montreal, Canada, and I have a hero who I'm sure Phyllis knows. Her name is Virginia Satir, and she's probably one of the only women family therapists you could think of, and she talks a lot about just being very, very curious and wanting to be kind of a detective about parents and trying to learn more. I was the oldest of four kids and always really interested in writing, and went on a path of trying to become a journalist, and that was what I focused on in college and after college. Discovered that even though writing is a big part of my life, that I was really, really just curious about people and wanted to learn more, and so that sort of channeled me into furthering my studies and getting a social work degree, and I guess I've never looked back, and that's sort of how I got started. But I also took a break mid-career and stayed home with my kids, and I feel like that made me who I am as a therapist today.
I'll second that, in that kind of combining the, you know, the kind of the clinical experience and the personal life that we lead is a wonderful synthesis of what we bring into, you know, the therapy room, certainly.
So let's talk about some of the common topics that women bring to the table. What are some of the more common topics that women come in to see you for? Phyllis?
Well, what comes to mind initially, well, two things. One is, on a personal level, often it's about identity, and maybe more so when women are younger, but not necessarily, because, you know, the second thing that comes to mind is transitions, and those often include relationships. So, you know, it's that combination where maybe it's the emotions that bring the woman in, you know, stress or anxiety, depression, frustration. But it's often around change, and you can count on nothing except change itself, and that's always happening in our lives. You know, whether it's marriage, divorce, loss, aging parents, self-esteem, work, life, work balance. There's just no end to the possibilities, but I think so many of them stem from the transitions that we continue to experience in the life cycle.
And Jen, what do you say?
Well, Phyllis pretty much summed it up, but I would add just that most of the people I meet with are really hard on themselves. And so over the years, self-compassion work has been a big part of my practice. And a big part of my own life is learning how to be kind to yourself while you're going through all of the things that Phyllis just mentioned, which are very vital and part of just living in today's society.
Well, that's such an interesting point, Jen, in that self-compassion and women, that's an interesting combination because whether it's nature, nurture, or a combination, I think we all have a hard time often at some point in our lives not feeling guilty or feeling like we're doing enough and all that stuff coming together, it makes it really hard because women always have so many balls in the air that to learn how to kind of step back a bit and, you know, look at who we are and the contributions we're making, that's not always easy. And to be part of, you know, helping a woman discover that for herself is a gift.
Yeah, and definitely taking a look at the expectations that we set for ourselves, I think, be really useful.
I think that brings me to my next question, Phyllis. What do you see in the women who come in today versus the women who come in even 10 and 20 years ago? And I want to paraphrase this around the subject of what the message was in the 60s and 70s, that women really find themselves before they find a man, try to find a career that makes them happy or a path. So I'm guessing that has a huge bearing on the mixed messages that so many women hear. What is the difference in these decades?
Well, you know, interestingly, you know, when you've lived a longer life, and you can look back, and there's so many years in those experiences, I feel like, you know, I can look back 30 years when I first was in practice and see how different the situation was then, myself included, because I did the very thing that women were generally doing then, and that was getting a BS and then an MRS. Women who, you know, had to work certainly did, but if you didn't, you know, that kind of interdependency and dependency on your partner, that was kind of the norm. So the changes that I see over the past, you know, 30, 20, and more so even this last decade, having children who are now in their 40s, I see that they were much different than I certainly was at the beginning of our marriage. First, you know, women began to marry much later, and their careers became as important or more important than finding a spouse. So the changes so much are in, like, work roles and that issue of dependency, and with that comes more confidence, more self-assuredness, but also the flip side of that, which is more pressure, more stress. I think the main theme, I think, is about the dependency, independence, and what comes off of that.
And Jen?
So I have been in practice for 20 years, and I was growing up in the 60s, but I would say that I definitely see a pattern between people who are more in my age bracket, like 40 to 50 versus younger people, that I think the guilt is a little less with younger people, younger women. I work with a lot of couples in addition to just individual women, and a lot of the premarital couples that come in, the women just seem more, I don't know, not that they're being kinder to themselves necessarily, but that they're maybe a little bit more egalitarian and not feeling quite as guilty, although they themselves haven't yet gotten married and had their children, so I guess time will tell. But I don't feel the same sort of holding back necessarily that I do with people who are more in my generation or just a little bit younger.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting because I think that they're maybe a little more, have a little more confidence, but also, like, the expectations. I think that's shifting in terms of the roles. Women today are working so much more, and they expect more egalitarian situations. And it's great to be doing that premaritally to kind of set some boundaries there.
Definitely.
Because, you know, I think sometimes in the relationship itself, women are still struggling a lot to not do it all.
Yeah, that's where the guilt comes in, I guess.
Phyllis, by expectations, do you mean societal expectations or individual expectations? Clarify that for me.
Well, I think both. I think societal kind of sets the tone. And I think, like Jen was talking maybe about, like the millennials who you do premarital work with, and that's a whole new generation being compared somewhat to the baby boomers in that they're very big. There's a lot of them. They went through the recession, so that was a big blow to them. And they have ideas about how they want the world to look. And because of the biggest generation now, the world is going to be run by them in the not-too-distant future. And so they're kind of beginning to map societal expectations and their own personal ones. I think, you know, women who had a mother who worked and also took care of the home, if they're marrying now or thinking of that, they're wanting it to be different. They're wanting to share the load because, you know, women are working now very hard in a lot of ways, and who wouldn't want it to be equal? But that kind of shift takes a long time, whether it's a personal wish or society's guidelines.
So do you see marked differences in the women who come in who are Generation X or Y or baby boomers? Jen, do you see a shift in perception, or do they basically come in with the same issues, just a different era?
Well, I think barring the younger people that we were just talking about, especially where I live in D.C., and I think one could say about other big urban places, most people are just pushing themselves to the limit and really are all about pushing through. And so in that regard, I think having people just take a minute to take a breath seems like a very novel idea. And it's hard to actually convince them that, I know I'm getting back to the self-compassion idea, but I think it's really important that there actually research shows that the kinder you are to yourself, that the more successful you'll be in your endeavors. The way I see it is a sort of global kind of problem that at least we experience here in Washington. I don't know, Phyllis, if you see that with your clientele.
Now, you know, I mean, that's for sure. You know, the Dalai Lama and some of the monks in his society are doing research with neuroscientists in that that's true, that, you know, if we calm ourselves down, if we feel compassionate to ourselves, it makes a whole difference in, you know, our sense of self, our moods, and how we act in our lives. And our society, as Jen said, is so true. We're just driven, whether it's certainly technology, the recession, and wanting to gear up and make up for the lost time and the financial problems, which for many people are still there. We're just on this treadmill, and it's pretty continuous. And if we don't do, as Jen says, you know, pull back and turn off the internet or take a week away from technology or whatever, I mean, we really need to slow down. It's not good for ourselves or for the species, that's for sure.
As you both know, I do a lot of work with later motherhood, and it is one of several spokes of the wheel that has contributed to this kind of zeitgeist, this kind of chaotic world in which we live in, where traditional mores don't work any longer. Do either of you have thoughts about that?
Yes, and one thing that was coming up for me while Phyllis was talking is this idea of just a lack of time. And I see that with everyone that I work with, is that if only we had a little bit, I mean, money helps. If you have money, you can maybe outsource some of this, the challenges that come up in life when you're sort of, you know, as an older mother or, you know, or a couple. But I think that there just isn't enough time, even though a lot of things are happening in society that are supposed to save time. I feel like that is a big dilemma that we all share.
And I think stress, however we define that, is such a big part of that, because no matter what we're doing, even if we're loving it, if we've got a thousand things on our mind or if our to-do list is very long, the stress comes in and we can't really be in the moment. I mean, mindfulness, this whole idea of being in the moment and not, you know, regretting the past or being worried about the future, like being in the here and now, it's harder and harder to achieve that. But, you know, on a positive note, because, I mean, everything has, you know, the positive and the negative, I think that as a result of the recession and problems with the economy and jobs and student loans and all that stuff, what's happened is the multi-generational family has come back into the picture. You know, my grandparents, my grandmothers lived with us. They went around to all their children and lived with the families. You know, that was, what, 50 years ago. But now that's happening again, you know, whether it's kids who are boomeranging back home because they have big loans and they can't pay the rent or find the right job, you know, or parents who are on a fixed income and they need to move in with their, you know, the sandwich generation, the middle generation, or vice versa, by pooling the resources, and that can be money, but it can also be time, so that a grandparent who can interact and spend time with a grandchild and leave this middle generation, the baby boomer or this older mother, you know, out of the picture to kind of put her feet up, maybe read a book, meet a friend for lunch. That's a really nice resource that I don't think we've totally tapped into right yet. But I think more and more families are seeing this not as an anomaly and something you should be ashamed of, but as a new cultural norm in some ways.
Today we're talking with a marriage and family therapist and a clinical social worker about the most common topics that women bring to their therapist and what the contemporary struggles look like moving into the 21st century. So since this is for women over 40, let's see if we can turn our sights to women in midlife. Do you see a vast difference in the issues that women bring to the table, Jen, over 40 or over 50?
One of the things that I see is this idea of identity. If you've already had kids and the kids are getting older, well, who am I now that I'm not so needed? Or a lot of times when I meet with women who are over the age of 40, they're questioning sort of their work life and their relationship. This is a time when people are trying to, not to generalize, but often bring their husbands in to do some work around marriage. So all those kinds of things I see in my practice.
Jen, what brings the confusion for these women? What is the impetus behind it? Is it perimenopause and menopause?
That's a good question. I think it's just maybe, and I'm supposing here, that people get on these sort of spokes of a wheel, and they're just moving and pushing themselves, and then something shifts, and there's a transition in life. And I think often when that happens, people are more likely to just take a pause and question. And it could also be when different symptoms pop up, like symptoms of depression and anxiety, which certainly physically are part of the whole body of symptoms of perimenopause and menopause. So that could be it too.
Phyllis, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, you bring up perimenopause. I think menopause is a big impetus at that stage of life, or the stage of life, because it's a body's response to what's going on. It's a natural process, but it really kind of puts up a red flag, or can put up a red flag about, you know, my body is changing. Oh, you know, here comes the aging process. And I think that can feel like a whole new chapter, a joyful one in some ways, but something that you need to pause and think about too. And identity then, Jen said, comes up around, you know, those kinds of issues. And I mean, we don't talk that much anymore psychologically about the anima and the animus, but kind of midlife traditionally and mythologically, the other part of our identity, like the female, the woman, can begin to feel stronger in more kind of traditionally masculine characteristics. And so ideas around, you know, with the recession, a lot of men lost their jobs and women kind of stepped up to the plate. And men have been house husbands in a way that they haven't been in generations, maybe, or even ever. And being able to explore that other side of ourselves, kind of the darker or the hidden side, not darker, but certainly hidden, it can make us pause and wonder about, like, who am I now and where am I going and what's this next chapter all about and what do I want to make it to be.
Jen, what are some of the, let's go back to the mindfulness meditation, taking a break and just going out for coffee. Obviously, I'm guessing you would say do an exercise class or take a yoga class. What are some of the other modalities you suggest that women employ in trying to just slow down, go inward?
Well, definitely mindfulness is really helpful. So whether or not you're taking time out in the morning before your day starts or at the end of the day to try to just sit and be with your thoughts, that's one way to do it. But I find that most people find that a bit anxiety provoking because our thoughts often are racing and it just is tough to do. So another way to actually do mindfulness is to listen to guided imagery. I often recommend, and I do this myself, there's a wonderful teacher named Tara Brach, T-A-R-A-B-R-A-C-H, and she has her own website, and she works out of Washington, D.C., but she's all over the country. She has free guided meditations on her website that you can just click on and take a break, and that actually does wonderful things for self-care. In addition, I encourage, part of self-compassion is also thinking a lot about how you're not the only one. You're not the only one in this situation, that you share this with other people out in the world, and that can really help in terms of taking care of yourself, about not feeling sort of like it's only me. And also how you talk to yourself, taking a moment to think, am I being really hard on myself right now? Am I talking to myself the way I would talk to a friend or, you know, someone I really love? So those are some things that I suggest in addition to, like, getting out there and walking and seeing friends and taking breaks.
Phyllis, why is there so much hesitancy for people to go into therapy? For years and years, it was almost a taboo subject. And I'm wondering, do you see this changing moving into the 21st century, or is it still that stigma?
I think that, you know, in like big urban settings, I think women are probably less reluctant to go to therapy. I think that, you know, maybe the stigma is there in other areas, but the consciousness or the awareness, I think, has been raised by the media and their own life experiences, I guess.
What issues seem to be universal? Jen, what issues, no matter what decade, no matter what age, do you think women in particular grapple with?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest issue, I don't know if you would call this an issue, but is the word shame. I think shame is a universal feeling. Everyone that I meet with grapples with that. And I think if we can wrap our minds and our hearts around it, there's a woman named Brené Brown who's done a lot of research on shame. And she herself is a social worker and professor. And just getting back to your last question about the stigma around going in for therapy, part of what her whole research meant to her was that she wanted to find out more about vulnerability and shame and do it and just make sure she was, like, checking off all the boxes. And the more she found out what shame was all about and that it's actually the thing that holds us back from really being who we really truly want to be, she actually had to go see her own therapist and work through her own issues and is now sort of putting her research out there, and people use it in the therapy room, and there are all sorts of ways to access that information.
And Phyllis?
The two names that Jen recommended, Tara Brach and Brené Brown, I mean, they certainly now are in the forefront of the mindfulness movement and, you know, women taking care of themselves. And, you know, I certainly agree that reading, you know, some of their work and doing some of what they're recommending is a really great idea.
As someone who has spent nearly a lifetime in a variety of therapeutic modalities, I'm not sure that I sometimes understand when I've had enough or when I've gotten it. So, Phyllis, do people ever get it and then leave and they're cured?
Well, you know, I think being cured or, you know, perfection or, you know, whatever we want to, whatever we're looking for in the therapeutic process, you know, I don't know if that's been well defined or if we ever really know what that is. But certainly finding a relationship with a therapist where you feel safe and trusting and set some goals together and you feel guided towards some answers and understanding, I think that's a wonderful experience. And in terms of enough, I think in life, you know, have we ever had enough or should we always leave the door open? I know that over the years I've seen a lot of clients for a good piece of work and then I don't hear from them for a long time, and at another life transition or change that's giving them a struggle or they're suffering from, coming back, it's, you know, it's like an old friend being able to come back and do another part of the work and, you know, and come and go. Certainly that flow is in life anyways, and why not make it in a therapeutic experience as well?
Jen, your thoughts?
Yes, well, I completely agree with Phyllis, and I think of it, you know, when I'm saying sort of adieu to a client, I say, you know, if you ever want to come back for a tune-up, I'm here. And I believe that we're all just in struggle trying to embrace those imperfections that we have and develop mechanisms to deal with them when things come up. So absolutely, I feel like it's a lifelong pursuit. And for me, myself, believe in going in and out of therapy when you need it.
Let's talk about therapy and some stats. Did either of you bring stats to the table? Phyllis?
I went online, and there's just so many stats. That's part of the internet today. You know, you can find so many things, but you're never sure, like, what's, you know, really accurate. But a couple of statistics that I found were that 25% of people in the U.S. have had some form of mental illness. And I mean, I'm putting illness in quotes because that's poorly defined. But that over half have go untreated. So I think that's a big problem in our society. And we see that in many ways with the homeless and substance abuse and, you know, mass shootings and that whole part of, you know, the underbelly of our society, that people just don't have the opportunity to be treated in the way maybe they need. And mental illness, of course, is a very complicated situation, so it's not, you know, easily dealt with. And that suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the U.S. Those were two kind of striking statistics that I thought in terms of what we're talking about today.
These are amazing stats. This gives me pause for thought. 25% of the people are determined to be mentally ill, and again, that's in quotes,
form,
but sure,
right?
Sure.
And as I said, I mean,
that's,
it's
amazing,
from the National Alliance on Mental Illness, so, you know, that's definitely their focus. But, you know, I also read statistics that said, you know, other things as well, but the 25% kept coming up in terms of having some problems emotionally.
Did you have any stats, Jen?
I just discovered that 59 million people have been in psychotherapy.
Oh, woo-hoo.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
But that's from 2004, so hopefully more people have had access since then.
And they are all now my newest best friends. Thank you for making me feel better. Mm-hmm. Before we go, do you have any final thoughts you'd like to leave the listener with, Phyllis?
Well, life is complicated, you know, for all of us, and, you know, being able to have support. The statistics show that, you know, having support in relationships, you know, work that you enjoy, family situations that are thriving and close, those are all good things in terms of longevity. And it's not easy always to accomplish that, and to be willing to, you know, put on the detective hat and, you know, be looking for things that are going to make your life, you know, easier, better, make you feel more secure, more stimulated, more loved. I mean, those are all positives that we should be looking for ourselves as best we can.
And Jen?
Yes, I agree with everything Phyllis says. Lovely. And also, just in terms of how hard we are on ourselves, if we're feeling particularly bad about something, to sort of isolate that and look at it as just one part of ourselves. I think if we can realize that we are more than just one thing, it can sort of widen the picture that we have of who we are, and that can hopefully help in being more compassionate to ourselves.
We've been talking with a licensed clinical social worker about women in therapy and a therapist about issues, struggles, and triumphs. Jen Kogan can be found at jenkogan.com, Phyllis Goldberg at hermentorcenter.com, and on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks so much, Jen and Phyllis, for joining me today. This was really enjoyable.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to the listeners. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. And until next time, I hope you take care.